This week on Thingamabob.
I just don't understand.
Yep.
It was all a lie to create the pyramid scheme.
It was quite literally all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, if you want a Capital One credit card, email me at...
Stay tuned for more.
Baseball bats and gallon cowboy hats and more. Magic rings and other nerdy things in store. Listen on in, it's time for Thingamabob. Better tune in, it's time for Thingamabob.
Thingamabob!
Well, hello, Brie.
Well, hello, Josh.
Hello, everybody listening.
And welcome to Thingamabob.
This week's theme is Ponzi scheme, pyramid scheme, multi-level marketing scheme.
All the schemes.
Yeah, quick buck.
We're scheming.
Yeah. Have you ever been a part of a pyramid scheme, Brianna?
God, no. I know people who have, though.
Oh.
I do.
Oh.
I can't name any names, but I do know people.
Do I know people?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do.
You do. Have you ever been in a multi-level marketing scheme?
No, can't say I have, but it does sound like a nice way to make some money.
That is interesting that you say that. I'm sure we'll get all sorts of into it. But before we do, Joshua, do you want to tell me your thorn? We're going to start negative today.
I thought we didn't have thorns today.
Oh, I came up with one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it?
Okay, I'll go first.
I don't have one.
Okay. My thorn is that I downloaded the new update for my computer, and I didn't realize...
Wow, just in the past minute, you came up with this
yes,
thorn.
Yes, I did. Well, it reminded me of all the other things that have been annoying, so I downloaded it. I didn't think it was going to be, like, a huge, like, everything is different kind of update, and it was, and so I was very surprised that many things look different, and all of my, like, million tabs that I keep open on my computer... we're gone. So I don't have them anymore. I don't know what I was Googling. Can the world tell me? No. So
there was no feature to like restore your tabs.
No, normally there is, but I think because this update was such a big one or something like that, it did not give me the option to be like, Google Chrome quit unexpectedly, like restore all the tabs.
Oh yeah. Sometimes if you click the little like triple dots though, you can go down and restore your tabs.
I tried. It didn't.
Oh, okay.
It didn't give me the option. So all my tabs are gone, and I was signed out of everything, and all of my apps updated, including the one that we record our audio in. So I've just, you know, been logging in and restarting everything and getting all of my data back. So that was my thorn.
The moral of the story is never update your computer.
Never update your
never.
Computer. Don't do it.
It's a scheme.
Yeah.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
Yes. Okay. So what's your rose then?
Well, this week we got to see, you've heard of her, Nicole LaCash. Her boyfriend Vincenzo had a premiere on American Rust for this like sexy guy at the bowling alley who was going to flirt with one of the like main girls or whatever. And it was very iconic.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fun. We got to like have a little premiere party.
Yeah.
With a lovely charcuterie spread.
They put together quite the charcuterie board.
Quite. It was like three boards in one.
It was amazing. It was very good.
Yeah, it was very fun. It was very cool.
Yeah.
To be at like a little party like that with strangers. I feel like it's been the last time we've done that because we've been doing like parties with friends.
Yeah,
but...
I know. Met some new people. Saw some old friends. It was a good time. Do you want to know my rose?
You know what? Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do. What is it?
Okay. My rose is that I've had my dad's old guitar in my room for years and just have never touched it. I think I took it one day and was like, I'll learn how to play this at some point, and never opened up the case again. And this week, I finally sat down with my friend Maria, and we learned together how, like, the very first steps that you need to learn how to play guitar. So I learned how to tune my guitar, and I learned two chords, and I'm very proud of myself.
Was this a part of airtime?
It was a part of airtime, yes. So it was like a fun little built-in thing. Airtime is like a job that I'm doing. It's like a live streaming
Yeah, if you've listened to previous episodes, you know that our friend Olivia is a part of Airtime.
Yeah.
And so Brie is now.
I am also now a part of Airtime, and it is a fun little community. And
sorry. That was just really funny to me. A fun little community.
I don't know why that would be funny to you, Joshua.
I just think the name, like, community for, like, online culture community. Is so funny to me.
I am building a community of friends around me who have common interests.
Like tuning guitars.
Like learning how to play the guitar.
Yes.
So that was my rose.
Was that going to be a recurring thing?
It is, yeah. I think Maria and I are doing it again on Wednesday.
Are you going to learn a song?
I don't know. We'll have to see. We might not improve enough to learn a song. Or we might. Who knows? It's going to be the same day that this episode is released. So if you're listening on time, come join me on the Airtime app at 7 p.m. Eastern time to watch me horribly play a guitar.
I'll be there.
Great. Can't wait.
Oh, and that's it.
That's it.
That's both of us.
Let's get started.
Let's
join a pyramid scheme.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'll be the top of the pyramid. You can be the bottom.
Okay. Today.
Buckle your seatbelts.
Really, though. Buckle your seatbelts. I'm going to talk about LuLaRoe. The multi-level marketing scheme.
The hit documentary.
Yes. I got a lot of my information from the Amazon Prime documentary, LuLaRich. So, yes, that's the title. If you, at the end of this, are interested in more information, because there is so much that I was not able to include, check it out. I am not being paid to say this, but it was very good. So...
Nice.
It's a fun time. Before we get specifically into LuLaRoe, though, since we're starting at the episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about what exactly is a multi-level marketing scheme versus a pyramid scheme, or how are they, you know, similar or different? Because some people might not know. I didn't know until I actually did this research.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So
I thought they were the same thing.
I did too. They are almost the same thing. So,
but a very key difference.
One key difference. Yeah. So a pyramid scheme is essentially one person promising the idea of a lucrative business or company with no actual product being offered. They convince people to join the scheme for a price in exchange for the promise that they will be able to make money themselves by investing in the scheme. Each person who buys into the scheme recruits more and more people to join the pyramid scheme, creating a downline of people from themselves. So the person doing the recruiting makes a commission off of each new person who joins. So if you bring in a lot of people, you have the potential to make a lot of money. Once you have a large downline, it becomes harder and harder for those under you to actually make any money. So only the top tier of the pyramid actually sees any profit, with the vast majority of people involved actually losing money under the promise of making it. So the only real difference between a pyramid scheme and a multi-level marketing scheme is that multi-level marketing schemes do offer a tangible product, but the business model is exactly the same. So you buy into the company in order to buy the product that you are selling, and whoever recruited you makes a commission off of your entrance into the MLM. Pyramid schemes are illegal, and MLMs are not. Some well-known MLMs include Mary Kay Cosmetics, Arbonne Cosmetics, Young Living Essential Oils, Herbalife Nutrition Supplements, and many, many more, including LuLaRoe. So, to start us off, if you go to the LuLaRoe homepage, you will see how they define their own company, claiming to be one that is intent on helping their sellers make money, claiming that, quote, every purchase supports a LuLaRoe independent fashion retailer, their family, and their community. They write, rather repetitively, that the company is focused on family, on lifting up their community members, and helping people succeed and follow their dreams through signing up as a retailer. And then, if you scroll to the very bottom, they have in bold black lettering, seemingly out of recent legal responsibility, this disclaimer stating, LuLaRoe does not guarantee you or represent directly or indirectly that you will derive any income as a retailer. To the extent any income, which could include sales, earnings, profits, commissions, bonuses, compensation, or any other similar item, is discussed by LuLaRoe or by retailers recognized by LuLaRoe, such discussion represents exceptional results and does not represent and should not be interpreted as typical income of retailers. You should not expect to achieve similar results. That is on their website.
Wow. So it's really, it's on you.
It is.
It's on you to read the fine print.
Yeah.
The bold print.
It is bold. It is bold black lettering.
I'm kind of sick about that.
At the bottom of their website. But I only went to their website in researching this topic. So I can't say if that was their pre-lawsuits, as we will get into. I have a strong suspicion that it was not. So I think that's a recent addition to the website.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's start at the beginning of the company and see how we got here. So LuLaRoe is a multi-level marketing company founded in 2012 by Deanne Brady Stidham and her husband Mark Stidham. The company originally sold skirts, then branched into tops and dresses, and most notably, leggings. At the beginning, Deanne and one of her daughters, Nicole, posted a photo of a maxi skirt that they had made together on Nicole's Instagram. They say that Nicole's friends commented on the post about how they wanted similar skirts made for them, and so Deanne took 44 orders for skirts and then had them professionally made and sold them to Nicole's friends. After this initial order, interest kept growing, so much so that she ended up selling 300 skirts over 3 days at an in-home party that she held. After seeing this sort of success, Deanne and her husband Mark decided to incorporate their budding company, and in 2013, LuLaRoe, named for granddaughters Lucy, Lola, and Monroe, was incorporated. By the end of that first year, LuLaRoe had hired 10 permanent employees and 145 independent distributors who they referred to as fashion consultants.
It begins.
Many of the permanent employees, so the ones who were actually employed by the company and not independent, were part of the very large Stidham family. They come from a Mormon family. Deanne herself has 14 children. So it's a very large family, and most of the actual roles in the company were fulfilled by family members in one way or another. But consultants or home retailers bought their way into the company with a minimum amount of $5,500.
Oh my God.
That's how much it costs to join. It was sometimes higher than that if a consultant wanted to buy more inventory to sell right up front. It just depended. But $5,500 was the minimum. And the idea was that consultants bought their stake in the company through buying merchandise at warehouse prices, then reselling to their family, friends, and local community at a higher price point.
So are you stuck with $5,500 worth of merchandise?
Yep. If you can't sell it, it doesn't matter.
And you're never going to sell that.
People did. People did sell that much, but it doesn't continue that way.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So these days, after significant pushback and mounting lawsuits, the price to join is $499 for 65 pieces of clothing. So it has dropped significantly because of public pressure.
Sounds nicer to join, suspiciously.
Yes, it is. It is very suspicious. So what was the benefit of buying into a company with that large of an investment up front? The promise that was made by Deanne and Mark was that their investment would double after selling merchandise, as well as the promise that if they recruited more people to become LuLaRoe distributors, they would earn a bonus check for each person they brought on and a portion of their sales.
This just, I don't know. To me, like, banks are scummy, right? But mm-hmm. This just sounds like banks. You know,
kind of, yeah.
Like the way they're like, oh, you get $100 for each person you refer to our bank to put money into the bank so we can have more money.
You heard it here first. Banks are multi-level marketing schemes.
I mean.
Yeah, no, I definitely see where you're coming from, though.
There's no tangible product. It's just your money. It's literally an investment. So I guess, yeah. Whatever. I'm not saying that banks are like that, but I'm just like.
Yeah.
It's like that, though, where there's like, you know. $500 for, I get this all the time for a Capital One credit card.
Mm-hmm.
It's like $500 for five friends or whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, Okay.
Right, exactly. I mean, I guess the tangible product is that, like, your money is safe in theory, but we know historically that's not always
not true.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about the actual, speaking of money, the money that LuLaRoe was able to make. So in their first year, they made $3 million in sales.
This is 2012 or you say it was 2014?
This is 2013, after they're incorporated. Yeah. And in mid-2014, the company would introduce leggings to their stock, which would become the product that they were most well known for. The appeal of the clothing in the early days came from the material that they used. People raved about how soft and how comfortable the fabric was and how each piece was individual because the patterns that they used came in limited runs. Usually around 5,000 pieces or less were made of any one given pattern. The clothing was also marketed as a modest clothing alternative to traditional retailers, which was a selling point that the Mormon founders, Deanne and Mark, really wanted to drive home. That's how they got a lot of people on board, was that these are modest clothes, but they are quote-unquote cute as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Now, by the end of 2014, the company had 23 employees, so they're up from 10, 750 fashion consultants.
Wow.
And profits at $9.8 million.
Wow.
They are very fast growing. They
from 700 people?
750 fashion consultants and $9.8 million in profits, yeah.
Wow.
they're selling a lot of leggings.
That's a lot of leggings.
Yep. Yeah, so that was 2014. And by April of 2017, so just 3 years later, the company had over 80,000 fashion consultants and had made $2.3 billion in sales.
I had no idea.
It's huge. It is huge. It covers the entire United States. It's not just like a couple of states. Like, it exploded.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I'm just thinking of Bulletproof right now. What's that artist's name?
But LaRue?
LaRue.
Why?
LuLaRoe?
Oh, stop. LuLaRoe.
LuLaRoe. Oh, my God. That's I had no idea. I was like,
crazy.
Oh, wow. It goes downhill from that 8 or 7 million or whatever.
No.
9. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's 2017, which is kind of like the peak of LuLaRoe. So we're at the apex right now.
So recent.
Yes, it is. This whole thing is recent. This is less than 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. And part of what made LuLaRoe so successful so quickly and how they got so many sellers on board was that it gained popularity right when Facebook Live debuted in 2015. So sellers could branch out from selling to their immediate communities and go live, and they could reach everyone that they knew on their Facebook network.
Oh my God, I've seen some of those.
Yeah, so people purchasing could claim the pieces that they wanted in the comments. It was almost like auctioning things off.
Yeah.
It was wild. And the seller would just ship them their items. And due to the limited run nature of the products, selling online also benefited the company because buyers looking for specific pieces or patterns could join different LuLaRoe Facebook groups and order from across the country.
Oh, God.
I know. People searching who were, like, big into LuLaRoe called certain pieces that they, like, really, really wanted unicorn pieces. It was, like, a phrase popular in the community.
Because it was, like, mysterious.
Exactly.
And, you know, because they're like one of a kind. Not one
yes.
of a kind, but like 700 of a kind.
Yeah. Exactly. So they would search for their unicorn pieces through different Facebook groups. And that created this really intense and like frenzied buying environment for each new LuLaRoe drop and harnessed the power of the buy now before it's gone forever mentality.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's limited edition. Released from the Disney vault.
Really, though. That's pretty much exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was really, really wild. And so just the, like, online selling culture helped the company to explode in more ways than one. But who made all of this possible? It's the consultants. I'm going to tell you about them next, because outside of, like, the business itself, part of what makes LuLaRoe so insane is the multi-level marketing aspect of it, the people who join the scheme. So from the start, consultants were primarily women, and they were drawn into the company because of what it promised. LuLaRoe was popular in areas heavily affected by the 2008 financial crisis, and stay-at-home moms were the prime target for LuLaRoe. They preyed on women in traditional roles who were looking for more income for their families, but who couldn't work a regular job for a multitude of reasons. So those who signed up were sold the line that they could make a full-time salary on part-time work, they could work from home, and they could still be there to provide for their kids. The company touted a female empowerment, be your own girl boss sort of attitude.
Girl boss.
Girl boss all over the place. To all these women who felt that they had really little control over their family's finances and they wanted to work to better their circumstances. A lot of the interviews in the documentary that I watched were women talking about how they were on food stamps and they were on government assistance. And they were, you know, they had like multiple young children at home and were really just looking for a way to lift themselves out of this circumstance. And they heard all of these incredible success stories from other women who had joined LuLaRoe. But remember, it's at least $5,500 to join. And so where do they get that money? It goes downhill from there.
Preying on these poor women.
Yes. Yeah. So speaking of, women were actually encouraged to do everything that they could in order to afford to buy their way into the company. One said this, I was urged to stop paying my bills to invest in more inventory.
Oh my God.
I was urged to get rid of television. I was urged to pawn my vehicle. Other sellers reported being told to take out multiple new credit cards to cover the cost and even sell their breast milk to make the joining fee.
Oh my God.
Yes. And if you watch the documentary, Deanne and Mark will deny all of these claims. But there are like personal firsthand accounts where women are talking about how either the founders or the people who were drawing them into this scheme were like, you know, it's a really incredible thing. It's breast milk sells for so much money that like just look into it. Like it's wild.
But even if nobody suggested that and they felt the pressure to do that, mm-hmm. you're responsible. You don't feel guilty.
Yeah, I know. It's rough. So there's a huge amount of pushing being done on the part of the higher-ups at the company and on those early consultants. For
also
people,
because they have an incentive for you to join.
Exactly. They're trying to create a downline.
Yeah.
So as much as they might believe in this, like, culture of the company and being there to empower other women and, like, being your own girl boss, whatever, as much as they believe in that, they also have a personal stake in
yeah.
getting other people to join. It is not just about, like, it would be good for you. It would be good for me.
Yeah. Anyway, if you want a Capital One credit card, email me at...
Oh, my God. So women were told that they would make back double what they invested into the clothing pieces because you're selling them at a higher price. And for those who also recruited other sellers, there was the potential for huge amounts of money to be made in the form of bonus checks. Bonus checks were awarded to consultants who brought in others, creating a downline for themselves. And if you were one of the earliest retailers to join LuLaRoe, some of the largest bonus checks amounted to 6 figures per month. Now, as I said, this was only if you had joined the company as a consultant right at the beginning, because then you're inviting people and they're in your downline. And the people in your downline are inviting other people and creating this massive pyramid. So with so many other consultants underneath you, the bonus checks for signing people up could get into 6 figures for some of them, which is insane. But then if you join later, like if you're one to join in 2017 and you have, what, 70,000 women ahead of you on the period, the pyramid, you're not making any bonus checks probably because now
no.
everyone you know, there's 10 different LuLaRoe retailers in your small town. So as pyramid schemes work, the people on the bottom are making no money and in mm-hmm. fact are losing money. So from everyone interviewed in the Amazon Prime series, it was clear that the amount of money they made from sales never surpassed the amount that they made on bonus checks, despite Deanne and Mark Stidham claiming that the majority of money is made from distributing the product. This, if nothing else, is a classic example of how this company is a multi-level marketing scheme. The money is being made off of bringing other people into the scheme, not from the actual product being sold. To my understanding, they have since changed their bonus policy because they came under a lot of fire for it to be based on actual sales and not recruitment. So that's different now, but
cool.
Yeah. So if you're a consultant, there are 5 different levels within the company that you can reach. It starts with consultant. That's the bottom tier. From there, you could become a sponsor, and then a trainer, followed by a coach, and then at the top tier, a mentor. In order to move up each of these levels, you had to have a certain number of sales per month and a certain number of people in your downline. If you managed to make it to mentor status, you could be rewarded with jewelry, cruises, retreats, private concerts at company events, and of course, giant bonus checks. But not everyone was so lucky, especially once the product that they were trying so desperately to sell began to tank in quality.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right, because that's the whole thing, is at the beginning, people didn't really think of it as an MLM because the product that they were receiving was actually good,
or
was thought to be good. But in late 2016, LuLaRoe began to receive reports from their consultants and their customers that the, quote, buttery soft quality leggings, skirts, dresses, and tops that they had come to love were now falling apart upon first wear.
Oh, my God.
Arriving stained, wet, and smelling horrible. And there were also issues with the prints that people love so much, many of which appear to have been ripped off of smaller designers or were so poorly cut that prints such as hamburgers and a long cylindrical flower were both placed right on the crotch of many leggings. So there was quite literally product placement issues. So Deanne and Mark's response to complaints was to basically gaslight their sellers, saying that they didn't have any problems. And if they did, it was a one-off problem or it was the fault of the postal system or the consultants themselves.
Bye.
Yep.
Bye.
They refused to buy back damaged goods and forced the responsibility and therefore cost of the damaged products onto their consultants.
No!
Yes.
Oh, it's so cliche.
Just gets worse.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was later discovered that part of the reason for the quality issues was that LuLaRoe had begun storing their overstocked or unsold leggings outside in wire bins, exposed to the elements. So clothing was being bleached by the sun, damaged by rain, and even moldy from humidity.
I just don't understand.
Yep, yep. So a logical conclusion is that the company faced their first class action lawsuit in 2017.
Yeah. Period.
Yep, and after mounting suits and complaints, they changed their policy to allow for a 100% buyback option for any damaged goods, as well as any items from consultants who no longer wish to sell with the company.
That's interesting.
Yes. So they had that in place for a few months.
Oh.
But many consultants never saw their refunds after months of waiting. And the policy had changed once again to exclude certain cases, quote unquote, that were
or
at one point.
You don't want to do.
Exactly. At one point would have been covered by the total buyback option. Yeah. And then this is a quote from Time. In 2019, the state of Washington filed a consumer protection lawsuit against LuLaRoe, alleging that the company, quote, made unfair and deceptive misrepresentations regarding the profitability of being an independent retailer. The company paid $4.75 million in 2021 to settle the case.
Nothing.
Nope.
Nothing to, in their profits.
Nothing. Yeah.
2021.
Yep.
This year. Wow. No wonder this documentary came out recently.
I know. everything's being uncovered.
Yeah.
So outside of bad business practices, the internal atmosphere of LuLaRoe over the years caused thousands of consultants to leave the company. Deanne has been accused multiple times of encouraging employees to get gastric surgery in Mexico to limit their eating so that they could lose weight to better represent the company.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's so much about her that I couldn't include. It's just, it's
insane.
It makes
sense. It lines up.
Yeah. Sellers, as previously mentioned, were encouraged to go massively into debt to join the company. Mark Stidham had a history of giving sermon-like speeches at company meetings, quoting passages from the Book of Mormon to his company that has multiple religions or no religions.
Nice.
Company events were often required, but were not paid for. So retailers paid for their own flights, their own hotels, food, and any other costs that were accrued for these mandatory events. They had been promised full-time pay on a part-time schedule, but many found that they never stopped working and therefore never saw their kids or their partners. And many people felt that their home lives were actually ruined by LuLaRoe.
When they were promised to be supplemental.
Yes. Many top recruiters ended up leaving the company because while they were presented this idea to the world, I basically said that. I'm going to skip that.
Wait, no, what? Top recruiters left?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Many top recruiters left. I guess I will elaborate more on it. It was basically what I just said was that they were overworked and they were promised this sort of like part-time lifestyle.
Aren't top recruiters though like making six figures?
Yeah.
Or were they not anymore?
No, they were, but they were, well, it depends on when they left the company, if it was like before or after the bonus check changes. Mm-hmm. But even before, some people left because they had joined the company under this idea that they were helping other people, that they were going to work part-time, but that they were going to help bring money to their families. And a lot of people talked about how they got kind of like sucked into this culture and how LuLaRoe, it was almost like a cult in the way that they like wanted everyone to do these events together. And they wanted to, you know, they wanted everyone to go to the mandatory events. And if you were making enough money, you were invited to the cruise, but you were expected to go. You couldn't really say no without facing repercussions. And you always had to do what Deanne said. And you never got to spend time with your family when the whole reason you joined was so that you could work and be with your family. So a lot of top recruiters did end up leaving. So there's a lot of reasons to. women were also encouraged to work in order to, quote, retire their husbands, with the expectation being that they would become the breadwinners after this part-time promise. And their husbands would leave their jobs to help with the home operations of being a LuLaRoe consultant. So essentially, their husbands were also being drawn in to work for LuLaRoe.
Whoa.
Yes. So the complaints from both customers and consultants of all rankings are wild. And for more details, go ahead and click on pretty much any of the links that I have listed in the description, or go and watch the four part docuseries on Amazon. It is much more detailed because I don't have the time to go into it now, but it's fascinating. So LuLaRoe is still in operation as of today, stating that they have 17,000 active consultants, so quite a drop from 80,000. They are still facing lawsuits and internal problems, having received much public backlash for both their business policies, their treatment of independent sellers, and product integrity. And they currently have an F rating from the Better Business Bureau.
No surprise there.
Yep. And that is LuLaRoe.
Wow. You know what? I think I actually might check out this documentary.
It's good. If anything, you get a much better idea of who Deanne and Mark are. Mm-hmm. And the
to
sort
of...
To
be capable to do that, I feel like you gotta be a real specific type of person.
Yeah. They're wild. And the way that they talk about it is like they're spouting off this sort of nonsense, like they believe in it. And then they show you video of them being deposed for the Washington State lawsuit. And the switch is just wild.
Interesting.
Yeah. I recommend it.
Yeah, my mom recommended it too, even before, because I told
her
Casey. What we were doing. I know, hey mom, what we were doing for this episode. And she was like, oh my gosh, you have to do LuLaRoe and watch this documentary. I'm like, Bree's doing it.
Yeah. I sort of, this was pretty much a summary of like 4 or 5 hours worth of content, but
fascinating.
it's fascinating.
Very fascinating.
Thanks.
Okay, so pyramid schemes,
mm-hmm.
also called Ponzi schemes, because of a specific gentleman by the name of Charles Ponzi, one of the OG Ponzi schemers.
Oh, God, not Ponzi schemers.
Ponzi schemers, yeah.
Oh, so, I can't wait.
Interestingly, he wasn't the first one to do this, but his became so famous
that's
why people sometimes refer to these type of situations as Ponzi schemes.
Yeah. I love it.
So Charles Ponzi was an Italian immigrant living in North Boston. he later said in a like to New York Times that he arrived in the U.S. with $2.50 in cash and $1 million in hopes. Which
Shut
is like
up.
It's like the perfect descriptor for this man, because it's like no matter how much money he actually had net profit, he believed that he had more, which is a good indicator of a pyramid Ponzi scheme.
Yes. Oh my God.
So one of these hopes was for an idea of an international trade journal, and he sought $2,000 from Hanover Trust Bank, whom promptly denied his request for the loan because of reasons we'll get into later. He also sent a few letters internationally, and a specific business correspondent from Spain was interested in his journal idea in August 1919. So that's the time we're at right now. The letter,
that's so much earlier than I thought it was.
I know, it's like early.
Wow, I thought it was like maybe the 60s.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 1919. That's where we're at right now. So this is why he could kind of like get away with some of the things that he got away with.
Yeah.
The letter that was sent from this correspondent included an international post reply coupon, which Charles Ponzi had never seen before. This little piece of paper would make Ponzi a millionaire.
Oh, my God.
So the coupon's purpose was to be exchanged for a postage stamp so you could send a letter back. It was like a little, like, send me a reply, please, you know, free of charge kind of situation. Mm-hmm. You know how sometimes they give you, like, return postage?
Yeah, like, it's like included? A prepaid envelope.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very that, but, like, in 1919.
Okay.
And the coupon he received was purchased in Spain. So the price of the coupon, because of the exchange rate, was 1/6 the value of a U.S. postage stamp. So you can see kind of the lights and the things spinning in Charles'
mind. Yeah, the
cogs
have started moving.
Uh-huh. A nice little arbitrage moment. So U.S. dollars, if you're not catching on, U.S. dollars can be exchanged for Spanish currency, which can be used to purchase the international post reply coupon, which can then be exchanged for a U.S. postage stamp, and then can be sold for U.S. dollars. Boom. Profit. It's a lot of work.
Right.
But by the time you get there, like, this is 1/6, so you can get, like, six times the amount. If you can buy so many of these postage stamps, you can make times six profits.
Right.
So it's definitely, like, you know, something that he was like, I want to do this. But Ponzi, he didn't quite have the funds to do this, right? He $2.50.
Of course, yes. But a million in thoughts.
A million in thoughts and dreams and hopes. So he needed investors, and a lot of them. This could be a fast, massive money-making opportunity, so he decided to create a company called the Security and Exchange Company.
Mm.
Those who invested in his scheme were promised a 40% return in 90 days. This opportunity was reaching mostly through word of mouth in his community in Boston that he was a part of, which was mostly the immigrant community in the beginning.
Because he was an Italian immigrant?
Yeah.
Okay.
So January of 1920, just 1 year later, well, I think it was in late 1919, so just a little bit later, the investment began in small amounts and then increased to a 100% return rate for 90-day notes and 50% for 45-day notes.
Seems too good to be true.
It really does it. So if you invest $100, like, in 45 days, you'll get $150 back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you invest it in 90 days, you'll get $200 back. So you'll double your money. It's a little... Yeah, it is too good to be true.
Yeah.
So in 1 month, the money coming in was already flooding because the investment return was quite attractive, even if it was a little suspicious. Like, maybe they weren't as suspicious because they weren't quite familiar with this type of scheme.
With Ponzi schemes, because they didn't exist yet.
Well, they did, but,
they
like,
did,
in a different form.
Yeah.
And some people had done the exact same thing he had did, but in different countries, actually. Mm-hmm. Some woman in Germany did almost the same thing. So what the investors didn't know, and this is like what would happen in many future schemes, early investors' returns were paid by later investors' investments.
Ah, yes.
Which is literally the definition.
Yep.
So it started a long, inevitable failing cycle because these early investors were paid handsomely. Of course, this encouraged other investors who saw the success to join it. So, like, yeah, you say it was a little suspicious or whatever, but because these people saw people getting double their profit in 90 days, they were like, I want to be a part of this.
Right. Well, and especially, I feel like if you're like a young person looking to make more money.
An immigrant to the United States. You
right.
Know, like,
in
you're trying
1919.
To do the American dream.
Like, in today's world, we have the internet where you can be like, hey, this sounds really cool. Let me look it up real quick. Hopefully,
you see if it's legitimate. Yeah.
Right. Hopefully you have that second thought of like, let me check it out and see. And then the internet will tell you, no, do not invest.
Right.
In 1919. That didn't really exist, especially if you're an immigrant and you maybe don't speak the language and somebody's trying to take you for a ride.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you just see the success that your friends maybe are getting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
On top of this, he recruited agents who would get a 10% of the profits for recruiting new investors.
There it is.
Uh-huh. We can get away with not the agents, the investors. Or what do you call them? The
consultants?
Mentors?
Mentors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't
Coaches.
Get away without those. And those agents had sub-agents who would get 5% of the profit that some of these people were making. So it's a whole thing of, like, a big pile of investors to reinvest. Oh, and another thing that happened, too, was that because people were like, oh, my God, this is so good. You know, like, when you gamble and then you just, like, put the money you win in profits back in gambling because you're like, I saw success. That's what happened. A lot of these people, they got that double profit and they were like, well, let me double this now because now I have more money to put in and invest. And that's a that kept Charles Ponzi going because then he had more money coming in.
Yeah.
Even from the early investors. So July of that year, the Boston Post ran an article on him titled Double Your Profits. And people saw this and lined out Ponzi's door to invest their money. It was like an article praising what he was doing.
Oh, my God.
So now the community was expanding greatly.
Yeah. Double your profits. Double your fun.
With double Ponzi, double...
Double Ponzi scheme. Great.
So he made $15 million in 8 months.
What? Mm-hmm. In 1920?
In 1920. Oh, $15 million in 8 months.
Oh,
this was how popular this was.
My God.
Yeah, it was so quick because it literally
Elon Musk. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, he came with $250 and wanted $1 million in profit. He got that life of luxury he wanted. He bought a mansion in Lexington, multiple cars, fine clothes, and was living like the Wolf of Wall Street kind of dream in Boston.
Yeah.
The Boston of Wall Street, or the Wolf of Boston. The articles, however, quickly took a turn as investigations and audits because he became so popular and so wealthy so quickly started happening.
In 8 months, I feel like any idiot could look at that and be like, there's something.
Something going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you doing to like, what is this investment for? Is what they started asking because nobody knew about the coupons.
Nobody knew about the stamps.
He didn't talk about it because he was worried that someone else would steal his scheme.
Yeah.
So he said it was an investment in which you would get this thing and he like smoke and mirrors kind of situation.
Yeah.
Then the drop came. August, the Boston Post, who had garnered him that momentum to gain his popularity just 1 month earlier, got his publicity agent, William McMasters, to expose him, saying that he was hopelessly insolvent, which means unable to pay his debts, and was also $2 million in debt.
I mean, $2 million in debt, but he has all these other millions, but he has to pay that back to people, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he the situation?
Right,
does
so does he
really
actually
have that two? Yeah, does he really have those millions?
He does not.
The answer is no. It got worse because then they got a hold of his past. The Post published that Ponzi had been to jail several times. One time in Canada for fraudulent check signatures, and another for trying to smuggle 5 Italians into the U.S. Oh, so this guy, like, nobody knew, but he was already a suspicious man. And, like, they just thought he was this guy who was going to make you rich.
Yeah.
One day after this article that exposed his jail time came out, the auditor who had been doing the ongoing investigation of Charles Ponzi, his name was Edwin Pride, and he revealed that Ponzi was $3 million in the red, not $2
million. Ooh.
And he later revised the statement to $7 million.
No. Oh, my God. That's a big difference.
In the red. Which means that even if he didn't have, like, $13 million or whatever, now he really doesn't have $13 million because he's negative $1 million if you do the math.
Right.
So, yeah. So as we can imagine, the rest of Charles Ponzi's life is a spiral of sadness. He was convicted and spent 3.5 years in prison, released on bail, went to Florida, tried to sell land under a new name, arrested for fraud, jumped bail, fled to Texas, caught in New Orleans, taken back to Boston, spent several years in prison, and was released only to be greeted with an angry crowd demanding their investments back, but they wouldn't get them because he was deported.
Oh my God. He just did a little tour of the U.S. and then went home.
Yes. Oh, yeah, national tour.
Oh my God. Wait, so did they... Obviously, he didn't pay everybody back because there was a crowd of people there asking for money. But all of those things that he bought, like the house and everything, did they not liquidate that in order to pay off his debts?
They did liquidate it, but they weren't able to pay people back because there were other weird things happening.
Yeah.
And you know, other things, fees and stuff like that needed to pay.
Yeah,
you can't pay everyone back because some people, especially like early investors, had more than, you know, like the $13 million that he had, whether or not he actually had that or not, he didn't. And the house and stuff like that maybe wasn't worth even like $1 million.
Right.
Wouldn't pay back the amount of money that these other people needed to get paid. So either way, even if that all happened, it wasn't going to work.
Wow.
And after all that, this is the funniest part to me.
Oh, no.
When he was audited after that fallout, only $61 worth of coupons actually turned up.
Shut up.
Which means that it was all a lie to create the pyramid scheme.
It was quite literally all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, he couldn't even get more than $61 of this, like, coupon scam.
Yeah. Well, because for a brief moment, I was like, oh, well, it's sort of like an MLM, because in theory, the stamps could be the product, but, like, but no, he literally, God, he had like a personal collection and that was it.
Right. Basically,
oh my God.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
$61. It's nothing. It's not even like $1 million, you know?
No. No, no.
Oh
wow.
Oh my God. Yeah. Ponzi scheme.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. The origins of phrases and schemes and.
Yes. I think that's what's great about it, too, is it was popular. Like, the Boston Post won a Pulitzer Prize for doing the reports on it.
Mm-hmm.
But also because it was so highly unsuccessful and that they found, like, no evidence of the actual, like, exchange to Spanish currency and the international
coupons. Oh, really? They
couldn't
find evidence of that?
Well, no, they did. But, you know, like, there wasn't, like, enough for it to, like, actually make sense and add up and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it's such a good Ponzi pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
Like, name. That's why people call it that. Because there was actually no product. It was literally, like, a lie and a false little thing that he did to get people to just invest into something blindly.
I'm sure he was very charismatic.
Yeah. Yeah. Charismatic.
Wow. That's
totally
wild.
That's what some people said, too, is that he had to rely on that because there was no internet. There was no, like, any way for him to talk to people to get a specific thing.
Right. Man. Thanks, Josh.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much for listening. If you have any theme suggestions for us, send them over to thingamabobpodcast@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram at thingamabobpodcast or on Twitter at thingamabobpod. While you're there, give us a follow and please subscribe to our show on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Podcast, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Please leave us a review. It really helps us show up on the iTunes charts and the new and recommended page. Make sure to join us next week where we shotgun pumpkin spice to celebrate fall.
Mmm. And thank you so much for joining us because now we are all two schemes smarter.